from KQED.
Support for the California Report comes from Digital Foundry, working with leading organizations to jumpstart digital innovation. More online at digitalfoundry.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. And the California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org.
On today's California Report magazine, we're taking a road trip to the state's out-of-the-way secret spots this 4th of July weekend. Not the usual tourist destinations. We'll strap on skates in San Francisco and head to a place where roller disco is sacred.
I am your roller disco minister. I mean, it's the Church of Eight Wheels, and I'm as the godfather, that's my responsibility to spread religion everywhere that I go.
Plus, we'll visit a Prohibition-era bowling alley in Los Angeles that's been spectacularly restored.
All the bowling alleys where we are fancy and everything is plastic, and this is all wood and leather. The aesthetics make it look like it's been here forever.
We'll also take a dip in some natural hot springs in the Sierra. But warning, you may have some reptilian company.
I don't think I'll get all the way in.
Why?
I can't see the bottom and it's filled with snakes.
And sand dunes on the Central Coast, where you can still see the remains of a spectacular movie set from 60 years ago. It's our Hidden Gems show. I'm Sasha Coca, and this is the California Report magazine. Every road trip needs some fuel, and I'm starting with a 5-course meal in a place you'd never expect fine dining. I'm outside what looks like an old Western saloon. It's hard to get to. I don't just mean it's not near a main road or a freeway, which it isn't. You have to actually buzz your way in, by appointment only. Hello, good evening.
How are you?
Good, thank you. We have a party of four?
Yes.
Okay. I'm here in Tulare County at the Dutch Frontier Restaurant. It's not Dutch, and it's not quite a frontier. This place is really about the meat. It's a steakhouse.
So we've got the ribeye, the New York, and the filet mignon, Colorado rack of lamb. And then for the seafood items, we have...
The Dutch Frontier is in a dusty little town called Ducor. That's short for Dutch Corners, because it sits at the intersection of where four Dutch farmers used to have their land.
How are the lobster tails prepared?
He does them in the oven, and then they're served with drawn butter. And
so when you're driving along in Ducor, you see mostly farm worker houses, some run-down buildings that used to be businesses, and then you come to this old restored general store, and there are a lot of high-end cars parked outside. It draws people in the know from all over the state. They come here to dine, sitting in the booths with red tablecloths, listening to the old player piano, some big game animals mounted on the wall. I'm actually having my dinner right under a very large elk.
And would you like on your baked potato butter, sour cream, and chives? All right. And the soup, as I told you, was French onion. Our salad dressings are the homemade creamy roll.
This definitely falls under the category of hidden gem. You would never expect to find this high-end restaurant in this tiny town. We'll come back here when my main course arrives. But first, let's head northeast of here, up into the mountains, to take a dip in some healing mineral waters. You'll find them in the southern Sierra Nevada, way up over Kaiser Pass in the rugged wilderness. It takes a little fortitude to get to Mono Hot Springs. And as Alice Daniel tells us, you also need a tolerance for gooey mud and snakes. The road to Mono Hot Springs is narrow, winding, essentially one lane, even though cars go both ways. Potholes and bumps cause my car to bottom out. Fortunately, I have two adolescent backseat drivers.
and one of them is hanging out the window.
Well, I was going to look out of the car to see if there was gas leaking out of it. That's you.
My sons, Atticus and Asher, they're 14 and 12. It takes an hour to go 17 miles. Before this road was built in 1927 with dynamite and powered jackhammers, pack horses and mules would take visitors over Kaiser Pass, sometimes guided by Mono Indians. The 1930s were the heyday for enthusiastic soakers.
People loved hot springs. That was kind of the golden years.
That's Jeff Winslow. He runs the historic Mono Hot Springs Resort. It's an easygoing, rustic place with stone cabins and a bathhouse where spring water is piped into private tubs. There's no sulfur smell, and the water is a perfect 101 degrees. A few years before the resort opened, the Depression-era Civilian Conservation Corps built a campground here, as well as concrete baths to hold in the spring water. Older Japanese-American farmers from the Central Valley would spend months here.
In fact, there were so many people here, mostly Japanese, that they just took over the whole campground.
Some of these concrete tubs still exist. The trail to them in a meadow along the San Joaquin River is mucky in parts, kind of grabs you like wet clay. Some crazy people, like my kids, jump in the ice-cold, leg-numbing Sierra snowmelt. Before hightailing it up the riverbank to plunge in a hot pool. Well, not to me. It feels pretty good, although the water's really dark and kind of slimy. But there's more to this area than soaking. Rugged wilderness all around, alpine lakes framed by steep granite cliffs. One of them, Doris Lake, is a great swimming spot. But we've been told this place is slithering with snakes.
I don't think I'll get all the way in.
Why?
I can't see the bottom and it's filled with snakes.
Atticus, we've only seen one snake in
here. Where there's one, there's more. If I could see the bottom, I'd be okay with it.
You can see the bottom.
Finally, the kids get in and try to catch fish with their hands.
I think that fish are pretty elusive.
What's that mean?
Hard to catch.
No fish in hand, we head back for one last dip in one of the natural mineral pools. For the California Report, I'm Alice Daniel in Mono Hot Springs.
There's algae on the bottom. It tickles.
Was the heyday for silent movies, and audiences were thrilled when Cecil B. DeMille released his blockbuster film, The Ten Commandments. Although it was filmed nearly a century ago, its relics still capture people's imaginations on the Central Coast. That's where Diane Bach takes us for our next stop on our Hidden Gems tour.
Drive west on Highway 166, past the small ag town of Guadalupe, through bright green fields of broccoli and kale. Sand drifts across the road, and then suddenly, you're surrounded by vast expanses of the shimmering Guadalupe Napomo dunes.
Oh my gosh, I see it up there. That's it.
Beachwalker Jill Effling points to rubble scattered way up high.
That's amazing. That's the lost city of Cecil B. DeMille.
Those chunks of wood and plaster are remnants of the once epic Ten Commandments set. Ancient Egypt meets Art Deco. Giant sphinxes and massive statues of Ramses the Great stood guard over a hieroglyph-studded temple more than 10 stories tall.
If you lived in an ag town and suddenly a movie set came to town and you got to be part of it, oh my gosh, you'd be in seventh heaven.
That's Marjorie Lane Mangonia. She's a docent at the Dune Center in the city of Guadalupe. Most of the town ended up on the studio's payroll, wrangling horses and working as extras. Once filming wrapped, DeMille wanted to prevent rival studios from poaching his set. He ordered some parts demolished, the rest was buried in the sand. It remained a secret known only to locals for 60 years.
Archaeologists have begun excavating the city of the pharaohs.
It was the biggest set ever built for the most expensive movie that had ever been made.
That's a clip from a documentary released this year called The Lost City of Cecil B. DeMille. In the early 80s, the site was rediscovered by film buffs and later partially unearthed. Today, you can see restored artifacts, like the head of the giant sphinx, at the Dune Center. Guadalupe's main street is lined with turn-of-the-century buildings, not a chain store in sight. It hasn't changed much since the Ten Commandments crew was in town.
The old saying is that they would come into town Friday and Saturday evening and race up and down the street for beers.
Race in chariots from the film set. That's John Perry, and he points to a photo still from the movie. It's displayed at his auto parts store, where vintage memorabilia shares shelf space with spark plugs and fan belts.
So many people come in and they say that the dunes themselves are one of the spiritual vortexes, which I kind of laugh at. But I also think, well, every time I go out there, I feel pretty good.
The Dune Center's Marjorie Lane Mangonia.
And I think Guadalupe has a sense of that, too, because what we have here is just, it's kind of magical.
Magical because of a unique combination of natural beauty and Hollywood history in a place that time forgot. For the California Report, I'm Diane Bach in Guadalupe.
The 1920s are very much alive in a bowling alley in Los Angeles, which is the next stop on our tour. It's spectacularly restored with gleaming wood and soft leather, and you'll find it in one of the hippest areas of the city, Highland Park. Peter Gilstrap takes us there.
Maybe you've never been in a bowling establishment before. Or perhaps you have, and it wasn't this kind of place.
The narrator in this 1955 short film, Let's Go Bowling, wasn't talking about Highland Park Bowl, but he may as well have been. During its heyday in the Prohibition era, the place was a social mecca offering a lot more than just bowling.
In the very front, storefront, you had a pharmacy. The other side, you had a live music room. In the back, you had the bowling. And then upstairs, you had doctor's offices. So what you would do is you would come here, you would go upstairs, you would get a prescription for whiskey, you'd come down to the pharmacy, buy your whiskey, and then hang out, watch a band, and go bowling.
Bobby Green is the man responsible for the look of the place. He's a partner in the 1933 Group, a design firm that renovates and operates themed bars throughout L.A. Before Green took over, the business had been a beloved punk rock dump called Mr. T's Bowl, offering music, booze, and no bowling.
I used to come to Mr. T's Bowl in the 90s and then the 2000s. Saw a lot of bands here and had no idea what was hiding behind all these layers and layers of fake walls and drop ceilings.
What he found during the 18-month, $1.5 million rehab on the aging Spanish Revival building was about five decades of junk.
In all that trash were the ball returns, the racks of bowling balls, boxes and boxes and boxes of bowling pins. They didn't throw anything away.
It's an eight-lane love letter to noir, a cavernous space where period detail blends seamlessly with artistic touches. Vintage pennants line the walls listing team names. From 1931, there's the Hellcats, the Mix-Ups, the Whammos, and the Pinheads. Old bowling pins have been converted to lamps, and chandeliers created from the guts of pin-setting machines hang above the horseshoe bars. Doug Hartwell is in town from Massachusetts. He's just finished a brutal game in which he took quite a beating.
All the bowling alleys where we are fancy and everything is plastic, and this is all wood and leather. The aesthetics make it look like it's been here forever.
Oh, I got a strike! Who did that for me? Oh, yeah! Teamwork, guys. That's teamwork.
That's Oblivion Westwood. She's here to party down with her roller derby teammates Fleetwood Smac, Absolute Jayhem, Jade to Black, Jaeger Bomb, New York Skate of Mind, Sushi, and Mary Poppins. They're all members of the Varsity Brawlers, part of the L.A. Derby Dolls. It's their first time at the alley.
I think it kind of offers a lot to the neighborhood, but also brings some of that history back, which is so important to not lose that.
Again, designer Bobby Green.
I do sense a change. I sense a change with people re-looking at buildings, re-looking at spaces and saying, wait a minute, instead of us changing this, why don't we just restore it?
Although Los Angeles has not always embraced the history of its aging structures, Green hopes that could be a thing of the past. But as it says on the balls, tonight we bowl. For the California Report, I'm Peter Gilstrap in Los Angeles.
So I'm back at the Dutch Frontier restaurant.
When are you supposed to eat the palate cleanser?
We're so uncouth.
I thought that was dessert.
I'm having the salmon. My husband and my in-laws all go for the steak, which is what this place is known for.
You guys all getting the ribeye?
Yep. Heck yeah.
It's a surprise out here in the middle of nowhere, isn't it?
I like to say we're a diamond in the rough.
That's Nick Galusha, the bartender, and his mom, Mary, the waitress and hostess, who also makes a mean cheesecake. Dad, Buddy, runs the grill. This is a totally family operation. The Galusha's five kids have all worked in the restaurant. Michaela's the youngest.
I started doing dishes here when I was 6 years old.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
It was funny because, they'd stick us back there, and then we'd be overwhelmed with all those dishes, and then by the end of the night, we'd quit.
The Dutch Frontier has stayed busy since they opened in 1965.
It's just really word of mouth and, like, tradition for a lot of people. Pretty amazing how fast word of mouth travels, so.
That's how Greg Stainer found the place. He drove here from Bakersfield.
I like the lamb. We like the French onion soup. The salads, I mean, we like the whole shabam.
We're doing a little show about hidden gems, like places that are off the beaten path all over California.
I'd rather have this off the beaten path.
You'd rather not have people know about it.
And our next stop is definitely off the beaten path, unless you know where to look. It's a place where the boys and girls of summer test their mettle. The Inkwells are naturally formed pools under a bridge next to Samuel P. Taylor State Park in Marin County. They're cold, clean, and deep, perfect for jumping into. Launch pads of different heights circle the water. But who's brave enough to make the big jump? Lacey Jane Roberts tests her courage.
It's a busy day at the Inkwells. About 25 people in small groups, mostly teens, spread out on the rocks. I spot 15-year-old Annabelle Hill, soaking up the sun and hanging out with her friends.
I've done this quite a lot. I may be a pro.
A pro at jumping.
And do you ever get scared? Well, when I first came over here, you kind of have to get it over with.
We carefully climb up a rock formation and come to the top. It's about 10 feet above the water.
Great. I'm excited. I'm ready.
Me too.
Okay.
Annabelle steps off the edge of the rock as casually as if she were stepping forward in line at the grocery store. but she can't help but let out a little scream.
Nice job!
The inkwells lie where San Geronimo Creek flows into Lagunitas Creek, an important watershed for the endangered Central California coho salmon and steelhead trout. In the fall and winter, people gather to watch these fish battle their way upstream, leaping from pool to pool on their way to their spawning grounds. It strikes me as only natural that in the summer, locals also leap into the pools. Eric Bush is sitting next to me, watching the jumpers. I tell him it looks both tempting and terrifying.
I think I have to do it.
For sure. I'm trying to warm up like a lizard right now, and then I'm going to hop in.
I'm not quite ready to take the plunge, but Eric's an old pro. He's been coming to the Inkwells for 30 years.
It hasn't changed much. I mean, the people have. It's, you know, kind of used to be just like a hippie communion hangout type of thing.
I follow Eric to another pool, where the jump is much higher. He clambers easily to the top, 25 feet up, and jumps. He pulls himself up onto the rocks, shivering.
That looks scary.
I know, just think, people jump from all the way up there.
Up there is a narrow pedestrian bridge, about 40 feet up. Now, I have to stop for a minute and say, this all looks dangerous to me. Eric says he's never seen anyone get hurt in all of his years coming here, and I don't see any signs saying you can't swim in this important fish habitat. But if you're coming to the Inkwells, be careful. Anyway, I pick up my way across the rocks to another group of teenagers, and I meet Alec Woodyatt, who is about to jump off the bridge.
I've done it three times today.
Alec scrambles up the rocks, reaches the bridge, and starts scaling across the outside of the bridge's fence.
Three, two, one!
After that act of bravery, I know this is my moment of truth. I climb up to the first spot, where Annabelle jumped. A kid nearby named Mike taunts me.
All right, any last words?
I hand Mike my recorder, stare hard at where I'm supposed to land, take a deep breath, and cold, wet, and exhilarated, for the California Report, I'm Lacey Jane Roberts at the Inkwells.
You can see photos and find out more about the hidden gems on our road tour if you visit californiareport.org. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast. Our last hidden gem takes us to San Francisco, where Laura Clivens puts on her skates and gets religious. We'll let her tell you the rest.
Wow, this is beautiful.
We're waiting for 7 o'clock. Is it 7 o'clock?
Oh, it's 7 o'clock exactly.
Here we go, ready?
Yeah.
Daniel Albert rings this church bell at 7 p.m. every Friday to signal the doors are open in this towering house of worship. Then the music starts. But instead of hearing this, I hear this. That's because I'm at the Church of Eight Wheels. It's a roller disco in a 120-year-old former Catholic church, just blocks away from San Francisco's famous Painted Lady row houses. The pews are pushed against the walls, and red and green lights reflect off a disco ball and onto the ceiling murals. David G. Miles Jr., known as the godfather of skate, proselytizes.
I am your roller disco minister. I mean, it's the Church of Eight Wheels, and as the godfather, that's my responsibility to spread religion everywhere that I go.
Did you get that? Religion. The Church of Eight Wheels is Miles' brainchild. He moved to San Francisco in 1979.
I started skating Golden Gate Park about my third or fourth day in San Francisco. I mean, I was looking for somewhere to go. When I went out there, I saw four people go by on roller skates. I'm like, wow, they do that here? I can do that. I went and got me a pair of skates.
He met his wife there in the park, and later their kids learned to skate just after they learned to walk. Miles organized skate groups on top of the Embarcadero Freeway after the earthquake of 89, and he even skated from San Francisco to L.A. 14 times.
Make some noise out there, everybody!
I'm not that ambitious, but I figured I could at least skate for one night. I lace up my skates, and because I want to look something like Miles in his fuzzy purple leg warmers and sparkly red and black top hat, I put on the next best thing, a cupcake costume.
All right, I'm going to come talk to you guys. Except I can't brake. I'm afraid of using the brake. Okay.
Whether you waddle or sail around the rink, there's something incredible about the giant stained glass windows and disco lights.
This is what I call the 45-second skate lesson, because of course you can't do it.
Miles, who takes turns DJing and skating, spots first-time rollers.
Step flat, step flat. There you go. One lap is all you need. When you come back around here, you'll be going, hey, it's pretty cool.
It never gets worse. It only gets better. I love it.
For the California Report, I'm Laura Clivens in San Francisco.
Bite.
It's a lot of food.
Back at the Dutch Frontier in the little Central Valley town of Ducor, it's time for dessert and the end of our Hidden Gem show.
Mom sold all of her cheesecake tonight, so I apologize.
Oh my gosh.
But we do have Italian ice cream truffles.
Italian gelato, it's the Italian gelato ice cream covered with a hard coating of truffles.
California Report Magazine, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Let us know what you think about our show on Facebook or at calreport@kqed.org. Our director is Susie Racho. The technical producer is Seal Muller, with additional engineering from Howard Gelman. Our senior editor is Victoria Maulion. David Marks is our web producer. Our interns are Lacey Jane Roberts and Eli Wertschafter. The California Report's editorial team includes Ingrid Becker and Holly Kernan. I'm Sasha Coca. Thanks for coming on our road trip. Have a great weekend. This is the California Report Magazine.
Support for the California Report comes from the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children and youth at risk. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.